Session number 19052.
Patrick Brown, Reel 1. Patrick, can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
Yeah, I was born in Peckham in 1917, 6th of June.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was retired then. He'd been a special constable. He'd been an insurance agent or a baker. That's about as far as I can remember now.
Was he a special constable in the First World War?
Yeah.
And after the war was.
Oh no, after the war he became an insurance agent after him.
And where were you educated?
I was educated in Peckham in Belinda Road School and then Shumut Road Secondary School.
And what was life like in Peckham in the 1920s?
Well, it was pretty tough actually, but everybody was helpful. I mean, you never had to lock your front door. Ladies used to come in and see my mother and things like that. It was very, very easygoing. Well, things were so cheap now when I look back in, my mother used to send me out for a penneth of peas pudding. You get a big bowl of peas pudding from the butchers and things like that.
And did you have any hobbies at the time?
Yes, I was in the Wolf Cubs and I went joined Boy Scouts. I was like running and athletics in general.
Did you play any sports?
Oh yeah, I mean cricket and football and tennis, did those. That's about it.
Yeah. What did you do when you left school?
Oh, I went into. My father apprenticed me into electrical engineering, and the company went broke.
Where was that?
That was up in the West End, just off Charing Cross Road. That's when trams you could get. What's it? A Workman's, which took me from Peckham to the Embankment, and then used to walk through Charing Cross. Used to take sandwiches. What else did I do? I used to wander around the West End a lot just to do, because I was so inquisitive about the various things. And, well, working with a lot of blokes who were sent out for getting their tea and their sandwiches and their cakes and things like that.
How old were you when you started there?
My father took me away from school when I was 14, because then he was retired. So I was more or less like the breadwinner, really.
And how long did you stay there?
Where?
At the.
Oh, engineering. Oh, I was there for about 6 months or so when they folded up. From there, I went to where did I go from there? I went to Thurston's in Leicester Square. Where they made billiard balls and they had the billiard tables there and all that. And I was just the glorified office boy. From there, my mother said to me, "You're not going to keep in that job, you've got to find another job." And where did I go from there? Can't remember where else. And also, I went to evening classes and got my bookkeeping certificate for London Chamber of Commerce. And from there, I got a job in a wine merchant's firm. And I stayed with them till I joined up. That was really interesting, I mean, because they had cellars down in Tooley Street, and used to see how the wine that came over from France to England was looked after, and how it was the barrels were turned, and the moon, and straws lay on the floor. So I learnt a lot then, which is no longer any use.
Who was the market to in those days with wine?
Oh, I was out in the West End in New Bond Street.
So
So
was it to restaurants and.
it was to restaurants and the well-to-do people like that.
Not ordinary
No,
people.
it was high class.
And how long were you there?
I was there till I joined up, 39. So I was there from what? About 2 years, I think. About 2 years.
And what was your reaction to the start of the Second World War?
The reaction was, oh, yeah, going to be a bit of fun, really. You know, all the fellas in the office were about, well, no, a little bit older than I was. And they all thought it was going to be a great do. And, you know, I know we'd all heard about the First World War, but we never really thought about it in terms of what it would be like, really.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain's speech?
Yes. I was at home, I think. Yes, I was. It was on a Sunday, wasn't it? Yeah, I was at home then with my mother. We were digging, or I was digging with some neighbours, air raid shelters in the garden. So I remember that. I remember the sirens going off.
Did they go off immediately after the speech?
It seemed like that. I can't remember really clearly, but it seemed like it went soon afterwards, and then you heard the police blowing their whistles and shouting take cover and things like that. I mean, I went in the house and looked out the front window to see what all the fuss was about. So that was how 1939 start of the war started.
And you were still in Peckham then,
yeah,
at the time?
Yeah.
And were you called up immediately?
No, I was called up in January.
Of 1940?
Of 1940, yeah.
And what happened there?
Well, I'll tell you how it started. We had to report the Labour Exchange, and from the Labour Exchange, they gave us a form which said what day we had to attend for medical, and that was something. We went in this big hall, and it's all little cubicles. And there was a doctor in each one, and you know, they went right through the whole works with you and came out the end. And they just said, oh yeah, you're okay, you'll be hearing from us. So then after that, I got my call-up papers. No, tell them I, before then, you went before, it was an officer, I believe, and they asked you what you wanted. So I said I wanted to go into the Navy, Royal Navy, and they said, well, what's your second choice? And I said, oh, the Air Force. Last choice would be the Army. So I said, oh, well, we'll see what we can do for you. And that was that. When I got my call-up papers, I had travel warrant, etc. Telling you where... No, it told you to report to Waterloo Station with a travel warrant. You'd catch the train to Fleet in Hampshire. And it was really funny, as all these blokes with little cases and big cases, all sort of, you know, looking at the indicator. And we all got on the train and nobody spoke. We travelled quite some way, actually, before one or two started saying, where do you think we're going? And we'd all, actually, all the compartment I was in had all volunteered for the Navy. And, of course, when we got down to Fleet, it was quite an eye-opener, because we came off the train, and there was this sergeant there with a red sash across him, and all our hearts went right down in our boots then, and then outside was the truck, and then before he let us go on the truck, he had this clipboard, and called out your name and everything else, and then said, oh, get on the truck. And that was that. So, you know, after that. Oh, then we went to the depot, Boyce Barracks it was called, a brand new depot. It had been built just before the war, and they were still in the process of extending it.
What was it a depot for?
Originally it was a depot for the... RASC, in the Royal Army Service Corps. But the medics had taken it over.
So you were already allocated to the Royal medics. Army Medical Corps?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realise it until we got to the depot. But then we were told, this is the RAMC depot. And then we realised we were going to the medics. The first time I got there, that was awful. We got off the truck And the sergeant said, leave all your gear there, you're going to have a meal. So we all sort of followed behind in like sheep into this huge dining hall. Lots of sight. And already there were some fellows in there, and the noise was terrific. And we were led over to one side. It was this long table, all nice to sit out with, knives, forks, mug, everything. And he said, oh, we're going to have a nice meal now. And we had a really nice meal from what I can remember. It was like meat and vegetables and gravy and all things like that. Then we had a sweet of, I think it was custard and something else. And then we had a mug, big mug of tea. And then we left everything there and came out. And then he said, pick up your gear. And it had all been dumped on the out of the truck. Somebody had taken it out. He just dumped it on the floor. And of course, there we were sorting out what we were trying to get. From there, we were tried a march. It wasn't really, it was just a straggle, to what was called the company office. Let's see what happened there.
What month was this in?
January 1940. And it was, I tell you, it was bleak. I don't think there was snow on the ground then, but there was while I was at the depot.
So you'd gone to the company office?
We went to the company office, and there we were ticketed and docketed again, you know, your name and where you come from, etc. And then we were allocated, they were called spiders. They were specially built dormitories, and they all were like a spider. And in the middle was the wash house and everything else. Let's see what else happened. Oh, then we were given a room, barrack room, and then we were introduced to a lance corporal. And then he said, right, you lot, I'm in charge here. He said, what do I tell you, you've got to do. He said, otherwise, I'll kick your boss's arses out. And so we all very cowed there, and we didn't know what to do. Then he showed us the blankets, three blankets. And he said, right, this is your blankets, and I want these folded in a certain way. And he said, I'm giving you until you do it correctly. So we all learnt rather quickly to fold these blankets up. Then he told us he wanted all the bed spaces tidy. Then he asked us to make our beds, which was rather funny. And
what's the method for making an army bed?
Well, you had to use your own. He just said, you know, which is most comfortable for you. He didn't want it made, you know, apple pie or squared or anything. He said, just do as you think is comfortable for you. He said, that's the only thing I can tell you. But in the morning, he said, I want everything tidy and I want it exactly as I'm telling you. So I, having been in the Scouts, I used to tie my feet together, which kept you warm then. And I did that right throughout the army career, because I found that that's the most easiest way to keep yourself warm.
What were the other recruits? How were they finding
the
conditions?
Found some of them found it very difficult. Very difficult indeed, you know. I've always been a light sleeper, and I heard every move, you know, blokes getting up and getting back and throwing stuff, you know, the blankets around them. It was quite funny, really. In Reveille in the morning it was 6 o'clock, and everything was done by bugle in the depot, everything. So you had the buglers come round in the morning and sound Reveille. And then you all rushed to the wash place and tried to get a wash and a shave, clean your teeth, everything else, which was real. So I used to get up before 6 o'clock and nip along to the wash place and have my wash and shave in comfort, and then come back while everybody else dashed out.
How did you manage to wake up?
It's surprising. That first morning I thought, I'm not going to stand this. So I decided I would wake up sometime before, get out of there. And I wasn't the only one. After a while, quite a few used to get up that time and was out there. That was Oh, I'll tell you about the dining room. The first morning, that was awful. We were, you know, marched out of there in our civvy togs and all the other, quite a few of us in civvy togs. And of course, there was the intake before us, like in the December. And of course, they charged us and called out all sorts of things. And we got up to the dining room, and you had to be in queues. And because our corporal had marched us up there, or like semi marched us there. Then 8 o'clock, the doors were thrown open, and then there was two NCOs at the entrance, and they used to mark off 50 their cane, and then the last two men used to be the mess orderlies. You know, they used to go and collect the food. Well, that first morning was really awful because you didn't know anything what was going to happen. First of all, we were given knife, fork and spoon, mug and two mess tins, plates. And so we went in, all wielded like, and the corporal said, "Oh, make yourself comfortable and I'll see you later." And off he went. And the two orderlies brought in, first of all, the bread, and they shied it down the table. Well, if you're at the end, you're unlucky, you didn't get any bread. And the same with the margarine. That was so you made sure you're never first in, and then everybody died in. Porridge, nobody died for that. But you had bacon and tomatoes and everything. And just like a lot of walls, actually, that was my first experience, and I'm sure I became just like them.
So what happened after breakfast?
Well, then we had to go back to the company office, and there we were. There we were ticketed and docketed. You know, we had to. We were lined up in our alphabetical order. Then we went in, same our name and date of birth and where you'd come from and everything else. And then they gave you a number, and I was given the number of 737-2002, which was a regular number, a regular army number, which was so surprising.
What was the difference between the numbers?
Regular number was 737, and after that they became general service, which had about 8 or 9 numbers, or no more, I think. But I can't remember when the general service number came in, but when I went in January 40, they were still the regular numbers, regular army.
So what happened then?
Trying to think what happened. I think we were then introduced to the drill sergeant, who took us from... Oh, we were taken to the drill sergeant, took us to the parade ground, and we were told this was the Holy of Holies. Not allowed to go in here unless you were accompanied by an officer or an NCO. You're never to walk across it, run across it, or all that jazz. And then he took us into the side and explained what he was going to do, teach us to march, salute, and things like that. And also he would tell us what the bugle calls were, because every instruction was done by bugle in those days, so you had to learn those.
Can you remember any of the calls?
Oh, well, I can remember was about get your greatcoat on. It's about the only one I can remember, because that was it's about the only one I can remember. But everything was done by bugle call. We had the buglers up by the edge of the parade ground, and they sounded the calls, and you had to obey them or carry them out. And you had to listen very carefully, because if you didn't do as you were, the call, then you got put on a charge.
And how did the drill sergeant treat you?
He treated us very well. He was from India and been invalided out, and they'd sent him to the depot to train us. And he was a really nice person, not the ones that you read about. He was really nice, and he was very patient with us. I mean, when you gather the first introduction to army life. It was something. And he never swore at us, never cursed us or anything. He was always very, very pleasant. I shall always remember him. Sergeant McFadden, his name was. And he really treated us as human beings. But I can't say that for the regimental sergeant major. He was a swine.
How did he behave?
Well, he treated everybody like a dirt. I mean, one day I didn't realise I was on the edge of the square. And of course, he was on the other side didn't shout, and of course, I went to walk across, and he pulled me out and told me to walk. No, to double round to him. So I had to double round the square to him. And then he said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Oh, I come from Peckham." "I don't know where you come from." He said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm in company so-and-so." And then he said, "What's your name?" I told him. He said, "How long have you been in the army?" And I said, "About a week, I think." "You don't know?" I said, "No." And then, oh, he went on and on. Anyway, he said, "Right, now I want you to double round the square twice." And that's it. I had to double round the square twice. And off I went.
So on that first day, what happened after you'd been introduced to the drill sergeant and the parade ground?
Oh, he took us onto the parade ground and then tried to get us forming up in threes and doing the, arm's length. It's... to get you in line. He was very, very patient. I will say that about him. Even now, I can remember he was so patient with us. Because some of us were real... I mean, I was quite good, but saying it myself, but some of them were really hopeless. And he showed us, how to march, and then get us marching and things like that. And then came lunchtime, and then we all marched down to the dining hall, and things were just the same. Except outside the dining hall, there were two big buckets, and they were full of chlorine. And one bucket was putting your knives, fork, and spoon, and mug in, and washing it all around. And the other one was putting your plates in and washing those around. And you took them back to your barrack room. And then then, of course, the afternoon was lectures. You had special lecture huts where you were given all sorts of lectures. First aid, going right through the medical corps handbook. Then you had gas drill. That was pretty awful because they used to make you go into this hut, which has got, I don't know what, fumes of some sort. And they make you stay in, and then you put your gas mask on, and out you come, and of course, your eyes were streaming, you were coughing and choking. And I said, "Right, you have to go back in again, take your mask off, and go in again." Until they really, you're surprising how quickly you can put on the mask when you're doing that.
Was that on the first day?
No, that was about a couple of weeks afterwards. No, we were actually got our uniforms and things when we did that, because we hadn't got any gas masks or anything then. Start again.
No, so when were you issued with kit then?
Oh, must have been at least a fortnight. At least a fortnight we were in before we were issued with kit.
So you were in civilian clothes until that point?
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah, and the weather wasn't January in those days. And of course some blokes had very thin shoes and... It was quite horrendous, really. I mean, it was a hard initiation into army life.
What was your reaction to being allocated to the medical corps?
No reaction, really. I thought, oh, well, that's it. That's my attitude. So be it.
So what happened on the second day?
Oh, very similar, but you soon to get, as the days went on, you soon knew how to manipulate the queue into the dining room, and you try as your damnedest to become one of the mess orderlies, because that was where you So I've got extra shares. But and then, you know, they gradually got you marching after about a week. I mean, you were actually marching, and I mean, you weren't a rabble. And then, of course, the corporal tried to instill getting you to be smarter than the blokes who are already been in a couple of weeks, or 3 weeks, longer than us, you know, and things like that. They used to sort of do those sort of tricks to us. So that, all the time they were sort of motivating you to become regimented.
To build up a spirit amongst the recruits.
Oh, yes. Yes, a real spirit amongst them. I mean, because you all sort of, once you're in your barracks, you all cooperated and did your best to help each other out. Amazing how that spirit started even the second day. You became sort of firm friends, all of you, even though you're from all different walks of life.
So you weren't issued with kit until...
No, at least a fortnight. It was a good fortnight after we'd been in, because we had... they did inoculation... No. First of all, they cut all your hair off. That was the first thing. And then, of course, you had inoculations.
What did you have?
The first one was... when you're a child. I can't think what it's called now.
Measles?
What must have been an inoculation against measles, I think. And, they gave you one or two inoculations in that first week or so. And, of course, you had medicals, and then you had FFIs so often, free from infection. FFI, free from infection. There, that was most degrading, because you were in your barrack room, you had to take all your clothes off, and you stand there stark naked. And then you stood there for perhaps a half hour. And then the sergeant would come shout out, you know, room shun. And in come the MO with his corporal and a torch. And then he used to shine it under your arms and in between your legs and things like that. And you'd turn round, bend down. It was very degrading then.
And the point of that was that for sexually transmitted diseases or any form of...
Any form. I mean, sexually diseases weren't even spoken about. It was really like scabies or impetigo, things like that, which they were looking for.
Was that more rigorous in the medical corps than other sections of the army?
It was pretty rigorous in the medical corps, I can tell you. I mean, they used to hold them any time, I mean... Sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon, sometimes in the evening, just before you were getting yourself ready to go out. You know, they'd suddenly say, right, FFI, and everybody had to go back in and strip off. So, you know, it wasn't a set time.
So you were issued with kit a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
What was that? How did that occur?
Oh, well, there you were sent to the quartermaster stores, and you queued up alphabetical order. And then you went in, and the sergeant started shouting, one pair of drawers and one pair of vest, or things like that. And it's all shut. Had to hold your arms out like that, and it's all shoved straight on your arms. And then they shoved this still on your head. And then they shoved this piece of paper in front of you and said, sign there. I mean, you didn't know what you were signing. And then you went outside and went back to the back room trying to get everything on. And that's... putting on the army boots was just terrible. They were all brand new. They felt like a lump of lead. And when you put them on, you clumped around like Frankenstein.